Welcome to the next installment in our Proverbs class, and let me just begin by saying if you are watching this on Premiere Wednesday night, I apologize for the countdown that always plays. Someone asked me about that, and that is something put in by YouTube when you do a Premiere video like we've been doing so that we can all watch it at the same time. They put in their two-minute countdown, so it is unfortunate for a couple reasons. One, it means that the video always starts 2 minutes late, but also their music is a little bit obnoxious, you might think, and the volume is probably louder than I am right now. And so if you've jacked up the volume to hear me, then the countdown is extraordinarily loud. So apologies for that. If you're watching it later, you probably don't have an issue with that, but just wanted to clear that up before we get started. But we do have quite a bit to go over in this lesson today, and so I don't want to waste a whole lot of time doing things that aren't necessary. But according to our plan for studying the book of Proverbs, we are doing this topically, you might say, or talking about different ideas, concepts that are important in approaching the book of Proverbs and understanding the book of Proverbs as a whole. And so today we are talking about the ideas, the topics of life and death, or the themes of life and death, and how the author of Proverbs uses the pictures of life and death to show us what it is that we are being called to. And that is really what our goals will be for this lesson. We want to first explain what we mean, or explain what the Proverbs mean when they talk about the way of life and the way of death. And then once we have talked about that, we want to show that it is a certain quality of living that Proverbs is inviting us to. And we want to appreciate that and be motivated by that and try to attain more and more every day to this quality of life that Proverbs is describing. Okay, this is going to be somewhat a continuation of the conversation that we had last lesson about why we live wisely, or the benefits, we might say, of wise living. And remember that on this left side of the chart, under practical reasons, the better life that we live when we live by wisdom, including things like the respect of our peers, and admiration, and wealth, and peace, and good people around us, and being remembered after we are gone. All these, we might say, temporal blessings are talked about quite a bit in the book of Proverbs, and we don't want to ignore that. We don't want to avoid that. In fact, we want to appreciate that Proverbs is saying all the way through the book that living wisely in God's world, which is infused with wisdom as a spiritual physic, then we will benefit here and now from the things that this world, this age, can provide us with. But remember that that is grounded in a higher reason, a bigger reason. It is grounded in the spiritual motivations of knowing that God is the creator of all. God is the judge of all. He sees our hearts, and he sees our intents, and he is judging even now, we might say, and of course, will judge in the end. And so all of our daily actions are not just seen in the context of, well, how can I get richer and more famous, but all of our actions are seen in the context of, I am accountable to God. Remember, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. And while there are not very many, and they are usually veiled to some degree, there is a sense in Proverbs that there are eternal consequences. But remember, that is not the focus of the book, and we can't gain a whole lot of very clear information about eternal consequences simply from the book of Proverbs. Okay. Well, we have this idea in this lesson about the way of life, the way of death. And so let's just notice that that is the language that is used quite often in the book of Proverbs, that there is a path of folly and there is a path of wisdom. And folly, which we've talked about some, remember that folly is the characteristic of a person that rejects wisdom, rejects instruction, and therefore does not have the skill of living well. That is described as a way of darkness. It's described as a path that is crooked. It is described as the way of the wicked. This person is described as being crooked in their ways. And as a verse we'll see later, remember there is a way that seems right to a man, but the end of it is destruction. On the other hand, wisdom is described as a path of uprightness. It is described as pursuing righteousness, walking in integrity, a path of life. The metaphor is one of a road. And so let's just think about that for a second. This is not unique to Proverbs. You're probably familiar with that, that walking in a pathway, two roads, is something even Jesus will talk about in the Sermon on the Mount. But it's important to understand this metaphor, that when we're talking about walking on a path, we're talking about something that is progressive, in that it's not just a momentary thing, but it's moment after moment, day after day, year after year, over the course of a person's life. And so it is ongoing. It is dynamic, meaning that there is a trajectory. It's not static the same all the time. There is a going one direction and increasingly headed in that direction or the other. Okay. But in that way, it is dynamic, changing, increasing or decreasing, and it takes this continual sort of effort, and there is an end. There is a destination that each of these paths, each of these ways is headed toward. Okay? So this is the metaphor that Proverbs will work very heavily with. And those ways are described in very clear terms throughout the book. Remember, the book is all about showing the contrast here. So let's read a couple of these sections, not everything you see on your screen now, but just to notice some of this language. For instance, we have in chapter 2 a few verses here. So I'll read chapter 2, 13 all the way to 15. It says, in fact, maybe go back just a little bit to get the context here. Verse 10, for wisdom will enter your heart and knowledge will be pleasant to your soul. Discretion will guard you. Understanding will watch over you to deliver you from the way of evil, from the man who speaks perverse things, from those who leave the paths of uprightness to walk in the ways of darkness. And who delight in doing evil and rejoice in the perversity of evil, whose paths are crooked and who are devious in their ways. So you see that the admonishment for the son is to avoid those who are walking in the path that is described as the ways of darkness. And you can see or understand the metaphor of darkness being blind to what's really going on. Being in the dark, being ignorant, so on and so forth. But the way is crooked, the way of the devious, okay? Whereas the path of the upright is straight and clear as well. Chapter 15, verse 19 there, there's a difference between a person whose path is blocked, we might say, by a hedge of thorns, and the highway of the one that is on the path of wisdom. And so it is clear, it is open. And notice in that chapter 15 of Proverbs, it's verse 19 that describes that the way of the lazy is like a hedge of thorns, but the path of the upright is a highway. But notice on here, we also have verse 24 of chapter 15. The path of life leads upward for the wise, but that he may keep away from Sheol below. Now, this will come up later in other verses as well, so we'll clear it up. Remember that Sheol is not necessarily hell in the way we think of it, but Sheol is the word in the Old Testament that means the realm of the dead, so the grave. And remember that Proverbs is talking about that idea of keeping oneself from death. But that is the result. The pit, death, the grave is the result of someone who is walking not according to wisdom, but yet the path of life is upward. It's upward and onward, we might say. Okay, and it is 16:25 that is the one that says there's a way that seems right to a man, but the end of that way is death. Not on your worksheet, but here on the slide. Chapter 4 is one of my favorite statements in the book of Proverbs, and it describes this concept perfectly. Chapter 4, verse 18 and 19. And notice the beauty and the power of the language, as well as the way that it shows us this concept of a way of life and a way of death and the difference between the two. Chapter 4, verse 18 and 19. But the path of the righteous is like the light of dawn that shines brighter and brighter until the full day. The way of the wicked is like darkness. They do not know over what they stumble. Man, what a contrast. And the beauty of verse 18. If you ever have been on a hike that you had to leave very early in the morning and it's dark, and you're not really even sure what you're seeing or where you're going other than you're just following the path. But as the sun rises, maybe you've been on a road trip, it's the same way. The sun rises and each hour, each half hour, you are seeing more and more clearly what's in front of you, the beauty of where you are. And the life of wisdom is that way. Think about what that means, that as we go along, things become more clear. We have more revealed to us through God's instruction and through the experience of our life. And so we may not understand things very well at first, but we're committed to the path of wisdom. And as we go on, life just gets more bright and more clear and more beautiful as we go. On the other hand, the way of the wicked, it says, is like darkness. They don't know over what they stumble, tripping and falling and not even sure why. That's actually, I think, one translation of that verse. They stumble and do not know why. Without wisdom, living according to folly, life is so difficult and we don't even have the understanding to know, well, why am I tripping up all the time? This is the two ways, the two paths, a path of life and a path of death. Okay, we take a turn here, and it may seem like it's a detour, but I think it's going to fit in line with what we're talking about. Because we're talking now about wealth, and the way I think this fits in is that when we talk about a way of life, we're talking about Proverbs giving us the instructions for living the good life, we know that it talks about the success, the monetary success, financial success, material success of the wise person. And so we might think, well, in that sense, living the good life, we're going to have plenty. And that's what it means to live the good life, to always be comfortable and rich. But using that, following that question will reveal to us that the good life in Proverbs, the kind of life, the quality of life in Proverbs that's being described is something that is even greater and deeper than that. So wealth is talked about, as we've seen before, as a consequence of wise living. But notice that there is, throughout the book of Proverbs, several statements consistently throughout to say that that's not all, or that's not the greatest thing. In fact, these three verses here in chapters 15 and 16 are the formula that is repeated over and over again. Better is X, little, poverty, vegetables. Better is having a little bit with righteousness or with love or with the fear of the Lord than to have plenty, to have lots of income, to have meat, but to live in turmoil or to live in a conflict or to live with folly. Okay, this is a standard formula that's repeated over and over again, showing us that if you have wealth but are missing this other thing that's called wisdom or peace or love, then really you've missed it. and life will not be full, even with a lot of stuff. Okay. Notice this, and where's the verse that I wanted to read along these lines? In 11:16, here it is. 11:16-18. To me, this describes it the best. Chapter 11 of Proverbs 16-18. A gracious woman attains honor, and a ruthless man attains riches. Which one of those would we prefer? Okay. The merciful man does himself good. The cruel man does himself harm. Verse 18, the wicked earns deceptive wages, but he who sows righteousness gets a true reward. And that phrase, a true reward, and in the context, it's clear what that is. It's righteousness. It is his own reward. The honor that comes from that, of a good character. That is what is truly worth attaining to. Not just money, not just things. You can have that. But without the other, without righteousness, then it is no reward at all. And chapter 28, verse 6 talks about integrity in that way as well. So, what we want to make clear here is when we're talking about the way of life, living the good life, we're not just talking about having stuff and having money. Although it's tempting to think that, you know, well, if I just had enough money, then I could, you know, basically do you know, fix my problems and do what I wanted to do, have what I wanted to have. That would be the good life. Proverbs says, no, no, no. There's something greater than that. In fact, there are disadvantages to wealth. And we won't spend a whole lot of time on this, and it's probably fairly intuitive. But maybe my favorite passage in all of this is in chapter 23, here under the fourth bullet point. And maybe you'll remember this, that it's in Proverbs 23, 4, and 5. Do not weary yourself to gain wealth, cease from your consideration of it. When you set your eyes on it, it is gone. For wealth certainly makes itself wings like an eagle that flies towards the heavens. This is the Proverbs picture of wealth. Yes, it is a consequence often of living wisely. And there are things we are called to do with our wealth. But in the end, wealth is fleeting, and it requires a lot of, you know, attention to, you know, be checking your accounts and making sure you're not losing and all these things. And really, in the end, it just flies away from us the more we try to hold on to this. It's not trustworthy. Those that trust in riches will fall is the language of 11:28. Chapter 18, verse 11, like a rich man in his imagination has a fortress or a protection. It's not real security. In 11 verse 4, it does not profit in the day of wrath. So there comes a time when for everybody, even the wealthiest, will not be benefited by their wisdom. Okay, so that's not the picture we're talking about. We're not talking about being wealthy, being materially abundant to the point of that life is good and I'm living the good life. Talking about something else. There's language in Proverbs about the life, the tree of life, the fountain of life. What does that mean? In what sense is this is life being offered in the book of Proverbs? In what sense is it the good life? Is it, you know, heaven or hell? Or you know, but we've seen that in Proverbs, that's not really the focus. Those eternal consequences. That doesn't mean that we'll never die. Well, of course not. Proverbs admits that everyone will die. And so what kind of life are we talking about when we talk about chapter 10, verse 16, the wages of the righteous is life, the wages of the wicked is death? That reminds us of some deeper spiritual principles we learn later on in Scripture or see in other places in Scripture. But what is Proverbs getting at when it talks about wisdom and righteousness being a fountain, a tree of life? Well, let's talk about that a little bit. The real reward of wise living is this life. And it's life in various senses. And let's just kind of summarize these, and then we'll see an example where several of these are referred to. There is a sense in which Proverbs is saying there is a physical benefit of longevity, of good health, longer and fuller days that is a result of living wisely. So life in that sense, you live longer. And I think if you looked at several of the proverbs that touch on this about the wicked going to the grave, the righteous being preserved from the grave, you could use enough experience and common sense to point out the ways in which wise living avoids oftentimes the things that physically work to our harm, abuse of some sort, risk of some sort that we are avoiding by living wisely. It results in health and long life in a general sense. But there's also a social flourishing. You recall Proverbs that talk about the friendships, right, that we enjoy, that wise people find a community of people that are close to them. A friend is born for adversity, and there is a friend that is closer than a brother, right? There is a fullness of relationship that is available to those, or that is found by those who live in wisdom. Or the family, right? The children are a refuge for a wise person. And you find that that belonging in a family or community of wise and righteous people, okay? There is a personal fulfillment and a strength that is found in being a wise person. Chapter 13, verse 12 is, again, somewhat of a famous proverb, but notice that in this context, 13, verse 12, hope deferred makes the heart sick. Isn't that the case? When you're hoping for something and you never get it, it's just sickening. But desire fulfilled is a tree of life. So there's our tree of life metaphor. And in what sense is there a tree of life here? It's, well, when your desire is fulfilled. And I think we could expand that out and say that for the wise person, what they desire is the things like knowing God, fearing Him, desiring family and friendship, desiring to live righteously and in integrity. And so the righteous person has a fulfillment in the way that they live, because what they desire, they receive, and that is satisfying to them. And you would contrast that with maybe the proverbs about, you know, the rich person never being satisfied because they continue to go after things. The righteous person, a desire fulfilled, is a tree of life. But there is even then closeness with God, a moral life, religious life, in which being in that covenant relationship with God, knowing Him, is a source of comfort and again of life. And so, what are we talking about? Maybe this was obvious from the beginning, but when we say that righteous living, wise living, is a tree of life, it's a fountain of life. When we say that Proverbs is inviting us to the way of life, we mean this: fullness and soundness in all aspects of life. And that's what Proverbs is inviting us to. I think we could see all of those, or some of these things, in Proverbs 2, 16 to 22. So we'll just run through this. Proverbs 2, 16 to 22, you have it on the screen in front of you. So you will be delivered from the forbidden woman, from the adulteress with her smooth words, who forsakes the companion of her youth. So you see that this foolish woman, the woman of folly, forfeits a social fullness in forfeiting her marriage, her companionship. Okay, but she also forgets the covenant of her God, the rest of verse 17. So she squanders a religious fullness, we might say, or a closeness to God Himself. For her house sinks down to death. Maybe there's a legacy that is sacrificed there or compromised. Her paths to the departed, maybe even it leads to a sooner end because she's involved in these things. None who go to her come back, nor do they regain the paths of life. So you will walk in the way of the good. So if you avoid that, you'll walk in the way of the good. There's a personal fullness, wholeness, we might say, a wholeness from avoiding that life. Keep to the paths of the righteous. The upright will inhabit the land. Those with integrity will remain in it. So there is a community of God's people for those who will live wisely. But the wicked will be cut off. They'll be excluded from the community of God's people. So again, there is a social fullness that is given. And of course, the land was always connected to a covenant relationship with God. And so that aspect is in view as well. Okay, so in every sense, the person who lives by wisdom is living wisely. Is living a full life. The person living wisely is living a full, abundant, sound, whole life inside themselves, in their own person. There is with others that are close to them in a relationship. There is a fullness there, and with the Lord as well. There is that. Not to mention the material security that is also available because of living by wisdom. Okay, so the qualities of this kind of life. What would we say about this this life? 1923 is great because it's a good picture of what we're talking about. The fear of the Lord leads to life, okay? So that one may sleep satisfied, untouched by evil. Good sleep. That's a nice picture of someone who's living well. They sleep well at night because there's a fullness of the life that they live. They are satisfied in chapter 13, verses 2 and 4. They live with joy. Let's just look at these verses all together here in chapter 10, since there's several in one place. Chapter 10, 27, we'll start and read a few verses down. The fear of the Lord prolongs life, but the years of the wicked will be shortened. The hope of the righteous is gladness, and the expectation of the wicked perishes. The way of the Lord is a stronghold to the upright, ruin to the workers of iniquity. The righteous will never be shaken. The wicked will not dwell in the land. So a lot here. We see the prolonging of life, so longevity here. But we also see the gladness of the righteous. And we see that they receive what they're desiring, whereas the wicked expect something that never comes to pass, and they are crushed by that. But the righteous have a boldness, a confidence. They are never shaken because they live according to God's statutes. And chapter 28, verse 1 talks about being bold as a lion. And so again, we see that same idea of confidence for the one living. So this is what we're talking about. Longer life, but more than that, of course, a contentment, a ability to sleep well, and not being disturbed by trouble or by evil. Being satisfied because what we desire is ours, because we desire the right things. And we are confident and we are bold because we are living wisely. And there is a connection here back to the promises of the covenant. And you can see that here in Deuteronomy 30. We won't read this. But you see the same sort of language that God always promised to his people that if they would keep his covenant, they would experience this kind of life. In the land, God would bless them and keep them prosperous. And so Proverbs, although different in the way that it is communicating God's will than a book like Deuteronomy, we talked about that, the difference between the wisdom literature and the law, but it is similar in the sense that it is offering two choices to those that are hearing its instruction, life or death. And as we're seeing, the kind of life that Proverbs is inviting us to is not just I am alive and keep breathing, or I can live a long time. And it's not even, remember, just to repeat our point from last week, it's not even just that, well, I will live forever because I'll live in heaven forever or something. Okay. Proverbs is describing, it's not denying either of any of those things, but Proverbs is describing a life now that is full, content, peaceful, abundant, energizing, invigorating, and always better. Every year, the way grows brighter and clearer and more beautiful. It's onward and upward for the life of the righteous person on the path of wisdom. And all of those things are the opposite, the inverse, converse, reverse, whatever it is for the person living by folly or rejecting the wisdom of God. Okay, we just have a couple minutes left here. And so I want to just close with what's in the back of the handout, which is that the reality of living in this world is that things are not always fine and good. Okay, and Proverbs, although it doesn't focus on it like a book maybe of Ecclesiastes or Job does, but it does say that due to injustice, chapter 13, verse 23, all the food that could be used to feed the poor, that is all swept away because of injustice. Talks about wicked rulers are oppressive to people living in the land, that things are not always right in the world because people are wicked, and that has a consequence on others. And we're very familiar with this sort of injustice, which is the result of human wickedness. Okay, and so we would ask, well, what dilemmas, what problems, what obstacles does that face put in the way of someone who is trying to live this way of life, living the good life, but then there's all these problems that are caused by others. So just to comment on that, look at chapter 24, because there are all these verses come from that chapter. So let's just look at some of the things that are said here. Chapter 24, start at verse 10. If you are slack in the day of distress, your strength is limited. Okay, so Proverbs acknowledges there's going to be distress, but says that we need to have the strength to match the distress, to make it through the distress that may face us. Verse 15 and 16, do not lie in wait, O wicked man, against the dwelling of the righteous. Do not destroy his resting place. For a righteous man falls seven times and rises again, but the wicked stumble in the time of calamity. So Proverbs says, even in the face of distress, even when we fall, the righteous person gets up again. And then verses 19 and 20, do not fret because of evildoers or be envious of the wicked, for there will be no future for the evil man. The lamp of the wicked will be put out. So we have some beautiful promises and some convicting encouragement here in chapter 24. When we face difficulty, when we are put down, when we fall and stumble for whatever reason, because of our own weakness or because of the opposition or wickedness we face from other people, the righteous person gets up. And part of the reason that the righteous person gets up is not just because that's what it means to live wisely, is to keep going, to have patience, to have endurance. But part of the reason the righteous person can get up every time is because of what's said in verse 19 and 20. The righteous person is assured, regardless of what they face in their life, they're assured of all the things we've said already about God. God is the creator. God is in control. God will judge. And so I know that even in death, I have a refuge. Remember, even the Proverbs said that. And I know that the wicked person will not last. The lamp of the wicked will be put out. Evil will be conquered, because I know that God, in the end, is the judge. And that hope and that assurance is one of the things that enables the righteous person to continue in the face of difficulty. And so we end with this, that chapter 30 gives a picture of the ideal life. Two things I ask of you, he says, deny them not to me before I die. Remove far from me falsehood and lying. Give me neither poverty nor riches. Feed me with the food that is needful for me. Lest I be full and deny you and say, who is the Lord? Or lest I be poor and steal and profane the name of my God. So there's two things that stand out about the life that we should be desiring to live, according to Proverbs. That we should just want our physical needs to be met. Give me neither poverty nor riches. The goal in life is not to be wealthy. The goal is not to be rich. I know that flies in the face of everything we're told as Americans. The whole reason we send our kids to school is so they can get a good degree, get a good job, and make a lot of money. But the proverb says, I don't want to be rich. I don't want to be poor. But give me what I need. Give me what I need so my physical needs will be met. Notice why that is. The reason is because either way, there might be a temptation to to violate my covenant with God. And that's the most important thing. My priority is honoring the Lord. So I don't want to steal and profane his name. And I also don't want to be so materially abundant that I forget that I'm dependent on God and deny him in that way. And so, what is the good life? What is the ideal life, the path of life in Proverbs? It's having a bunch of stuff, bunch of money, huge house, lots of cars, huge bank accounts, giant, you know, investments. That's not the good life in Proverbs. The good life in Proverbs is fullness, contentment, peace, joy, satisfaction, gladness, hope, assurance, because we live in the fear of the Lord and walk according to his wisdom. Okay, told you there was a lot to get to, and I probably took more time on that than I had planned. But to close, I'll give you a couple of discussion questions in case you are watching this with family at home or with others that you have gathered with. Talk about this. We do live in a very affluent society, a time and place that is richer by far than anything else that humans have ever seen in history. So how is it that our affluence might fool us into thinking we are living the good life when we might not be? Okay, so how can our affluence trick us into thinking we live the good life? And then maybe going along with that, how do we know if we're really living the good life? What evidence might there be that we are truly living the good life that Proverbs is describing? Okay, discuss those if you are able with those around you, or if you're by yourself. Spend some time meditating on these questions and looking back over the verses that we have talked about. But I am going to disappear and mute and leave the questions up for a while. The class is over, and I thank you for joining us for this lesson.